This is Julian Morrow with you on Sunday Extra, and I'm very pleased to say that we're joined now by two of the people behind a superb publishing project that's been going strong for over a decade now, and this month sees the launch of two new titles. Ngana Barangarai, or Black Wallaby, is the creative writing project for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander and ally inmates, and its latest releases are Scribbly Gums, Young People Dreaming Inside, which is voices from Cobham Youth Justice Centre, and the 14th volume of Dreaming Inside, voices from Junee. Joining us now are Auntie Barbara, who's the project director of Black Wallaby. Auntie Barbara is a respected Wadi Wadi elder, and in fact, it's Dr. Auntie, because Barbara received an honorary doctorate of laws in 2014 from the University of Wollongong, which described her as a leader, teacher, poet, advocate, and inspirational role model. Dr. Auntie Barbara, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thank you, Julian.
And we're also joined by Luke Patterson, who's a Gamilaroi poet, educator, and musician who also works on Ngana Barangarai. Welcome, Luke.
Thank you.
Auntie Barb, I wonder if you could tell us just a little bit about how the Dreaming Inside project came about.
Oh, my God. How many Sundays have you got? Very, very, very humbly, I had occasion to go to Junee Correctional Centre one MAIDOC week just to do some creative writing workshops with the inmates for that week. I'd had contacts down there previously through other work I'd done with prisons, so I got invited to do that. So I gathered a team. We got a little bit of funding via South Coast Writers' Centre to take myself and three or four others with us. We went there, and over the week in NAIDOC week, I think that was 2011 or 2012, and we did the creative writing workshops. So we had very, very limited number of lads attending, inmates that is attending. You know, fellows in prison, they don't really think much about poetry, but they were doing artwork, and we got them working and so on. Working with them was like extracting impacted molars, trying to get them to put words on a page, but with some due diligence, we managed to get half a dozen of them to actually write something. And that was all very nice. Although, look, honestly, I have to say this was really hit and miss. I didn't know what I was doing, and none of us knew what we were doing. But anyway, we come away from there at the end of that NAIDOC week, a freezing time in Junee. And I had the notion that because one of the tutors didn't come and I had that tiny bit of funding left, that I might get a desktop publication out to give back to the lads who had participated. And so I worked with Ricky Vassilakis, who was a director at the South Coast Writers' Centre at the time back here in Wollongong, and we managed to get something that looked like a book, and we worked on it pretty hard because we didn't know what we were doing anyway. And we got it to a point where we were satisfied, and Ricky was about to press send to the printer, and I said, stop. And she said, what? I said, put volume one on that. Well, you know, it may have been prescient. And she said, is there going to be any more? I said, it doesn't matter, but it looks good if there is. Anyway, that's what we did.
Indeed. And it's not even just 14 volumes, is it? Because the project has expanded beyond Junee.
Yeah, that's right.
Luke, can you give us a sense of exactly how far this project has expanded?
What was our? Do you remember our first like side quest? Like, was it Cobham and Reeby first, or was it Dilwinia?
Dilwinia.
Yeah.
Dilwinia Women's Prison in Northwest Sydney.
Yeah. So our first side quest, as I'll call it, we went to Dilwinia Women's Prison, and again, yes, there was the notion of a book, but we go into new places kind of not knowing what's going to happen. It's somewhat tricky working with prisons and correctional facilities. And then we've expanded to Cobham and Reeby Youth Justice. We've done a couple of things there, a couple of books out of both of them, and also some stuff in Brisbane with the Dreaming Big Books. And Queensland Youth Justice have been very helpful with us for that. Oh, and we've done also Two poets, though.
Yeah, from Juno Correctional Centre. Two of the lads that were contributing there, they were so prolific. They gave us and submitted a mountain of work, which was far too much to put into an anthology with 113 other inmate writers. So I decided they could have their own book. So we have a book out now that's called Two Poets Dreaming Inside. But if I can just go back, Julian, to that business of them taking ownership, it was very much proven in the COVID year, because we developed doing two trips a year for a week at a time to Juno to do workshops. And of course, with COVID years, we could not do that. So we sent messages to the NMOS to say, we're so very sorry, we won't get a book out for this year. Well, was I mistaken? Of course I was, because the inmates motivated themselves, and we got word that they said, no, this is our book. We want our book. So they wrote their hearts out, and I got all these submissions sent by mail, and we had the biggest book to date that far. So I think that bespeaks the value of it.
Absolutely. And Auntie Barbara, you've described it as sort of literary pulling of teeth. Luke, how would you describe the process that went into what's going to be the first volume of Scribbly Gums, the Dreaming Inside volume from Cobham Youth Justice Centre?
Yeah. Well, I think the idea of teeth pulling was a once upon a time kind of thing with the program.
I was going to say, it sounds like some of your poets would have no teeth left based on the amount they're producing these days.
No, they are prolific. I think once one book came out and people see, oh, that one book, they're like, I can do this. And it's become very easy. Brothers and sisters inside, they just want to tell a story, and they've got plenty of them. I think, you know, the barriers behind it are sometimes connected to how they've been treated in the education system and stuff like that. So with the new Scribbly Gums, look, it takes a while, sometimes a good 10 minutes or 15 minutes to warm up with the kids, but they're also testing us out a little bit. Mm. They've had lots of people in their lives come in and say, I'm going to help, and then don't, or they don't really engage with them. But, you know, within 10 minutes, Art usually identifies one that's a bit standoffish or doesn't want to participate. She does her little huggy, cuddle, whisper, it's all right, bub, and usually that kid's sorted out. My strategy is just act like a fool until until one of the kids is like, look, I can't be any cringer than this guy. Maybe I'll write a poem too. The reason I think it gets easier over the years to get kids and the adults to write is mostly the book, especially with the young kids. You present them with a poetry collection that was written.
And they're in it.
And they're in it. Yeah.
Wow, that is enormous. Whoever thought, look, one of the boys from June A actually articulated that in one of the poems he wrote for one of our books, volume, whatever. And he said, oh, we love it when Art and the team come here, because I didn't know I could ever write anything and be in a book, let alone an Aboriginal book. Mm. Hmm.
They become a part of the Black literary canon.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Often we have to go in and kind of emphasize what that means. But for the most part, all our mob know that we are the first storytellers and the best storytellers. And then I start ranting about how we're winning all the competitions. We're kicking ass in the literary field. And they get motivated. And then they read some of the brothers' poems from last year. Or, like Aunt said, sometimes there'll be someone who we'll see again the following year or the following time that we go there. And they'll be the first to read at the beginning. They'll be the ones, I'll read my poem. And as soon as someone sees that, you know, all of that tension is broken. Most of the idea of, you know, it being difficult or tooth extraction comes just purely from bad history with what it means when you pick up a pen and you're being judged. We try and stay true to the spelling and grammar of everybody we work with. One, because it's more fresh, it's more vibrant. Often
it's their voice.
It's their voice. And if we're editing, how am I to know what is meant to be good or bad grammar or what's local slang? What's idiom? And so once they realize that all the rules don't apply, poetry is super fun and you can be rat bags and speak your truth to power and all of that kind of stuff, it's easy.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Auntie Barbara and Luke Patterson from Nagana Barangarai, or Black Wallaby, the creative writing project for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander and ally inmates. I wonder if I could ask you both to tell us about a particular piece of work from the project, whether it's from the latest volume or from one of the previous volumes, that just stands out to you as special or memorable in some way.
There's just literally over 14 volumes.
There must be so many,
dozens and dozens. There's one that is called I Only Ever Wanted to Be Safe. And it's just gut-wrenching to the heart. It's as simple as the lad who wrote it, he wasn't writing, and I was sitting with him at the time, and this goes back to the workshops for Volume 4. And I sat with him and I was just chatting with him, trying to draw him out because he was deep in thought. You know, I thought, I want to mine those thoughts. And he gave me the most gut-wrenching story of his life. He said, I don't even know why I'm here, Aunt. He said, I was always such a good kid. I never did anything wrong. And then he said something about, I only ever wanted to be safe. And I thought, oh, God, what a great line. So I said, let's write that line down. And then I teased out, he couldn't physically write, okay? His education was way behind him. So I said, do you want to tell me? And I'll write. And he said, yes. So that's what happened. I scribed his voice, his words, and I did put them in a poetic form. But I did read it right back to him 3 times, and he was very happy with it. That's in Volume 4. I have repeated it a couple of times over the years in other volumes and mentioned it, and I would encourage readers to read that. Volume 14 is in publication process at the moment, and that's one that will be launched on May 21st at Wollongong Art Gallery. Now, there's a couple of things in that, and I'm cherry picking here out of the 14, but there's one in that written by another lad. He actually wrote a letter. It's addressed to your readers, so therefore he intended it to be published. It wasn't a personal letter to me. It was dear readers. It was 3 pages of handwritten manuscript. It is just so potently powerful in what it says. Look, I would encourage everyone to get Volume 14 and read it. That letter bespeaks a lot of his own growth. And we've had this lad in and out over, I think he first appeared in Volume 3. He's been in and out a few times in that time, and he's always written something for us. He used to always speak in gangster speak, G-A-N-G-S-T-A, gangster speak. And this letter is spoken in regular language, you know. And I thought, oh, my God, you've been hiding this from me for 15 years, you know. Anyway, he's just revealed his soul, and he talks about how much the program has meant to him and how much our presence there has meant to himself and the other lads over the years. And you can see that intellectually he's turned a corner. Don't know whether that can follow through, because when they're out, they face a whole new lot of difficulties, and they take the trauma of prison life out with them. But he's turned a corner. He's not the gangster anymore. He's left that behind him, and that's very evident in what he says. So that's a standout. That's a huge standout.
What about for you, Luke?
I think I like development, and I think we're talking about brother there. When someone begins their writing journey with us, and sometimes it feels like they're not speaking with an authentic voice, or it might be like hitting the streets to get some dollars. I love spoken word and rap and stuff like that, but they're doing tough guy mask.
Mm.
But then over time, they drop that. And sometimes that happens even just during a lesson when they're like, oh, wait, if I just speak my own words, it sounds better. So I do love those moments, but my favorite sort of parts of the book or experiences when there might be a poetic style that someone introduces 1 year, and then the next times we go in and someone reads it and they're like, I'm going to try this. So I think it was in Volume 10, I think, of Dreaming Inside. And there's just a great list poem, and it's just someone sitting in their cell or sitting in the courtyard or whatever and just listing things. And even the most
minute
things become really powerful. Like, I can't remember a phrase, but maybe soggy cereal or something like that. Just every word gets charged with this superpower. Going on to the following sessions over time, people seeing that one, being like, oh, I love this. I can do this. I can write a list of the things around me. But they also see how it's almost that show don't tell thing. I don't need to tell you how dark sometimes this place can be. Let me just show you. It's also great for me when I'm stuck with teaching. That's what I also like about these poems that Brothers Inside and Mob Inside will be like, all right, this is a style that suits us. And then say if I'm working with kids and I've got a kid that's not budging or doesn't want to do it, I'd be like, have a look at this poem. This one's awesome. And because it's written by adults as well. So this is the big boys inside. And it's got a sort of adult perspective of prison. And that tends to work really well with the kids. So as an educational tool, poems and moments that I can use as an educational tool, I think they're kind of my highlights.
Our mantra is to get them thinking and writing creatively, not to skill them up with how to spell. Literacy is not our thing. It's to get them writing and thinking creatively. And in that process, it comes out that there will be literacy aspects. Yep. We do get into it a bit.
And clearly from what you're saying, in some cases, there have been people who've really caught the bug and become enthusiastic writers. Are you aware of people who've been through the program who've kept up the writing habit even when they're no longer involved in the program and they've moved on beyond the centre?
Look, the usual thing is once the boys leave prison, they don't want anything to do with anything that happened in prison.
Right, yeah.
Now, that's the usual thing. However, can I say very proudly in this case that the usual thing just gets broken? The short answer is we don't really get feedback from the lads once they've left the prison. But recently there's been several incidents that have happened that have given a lie to that. We've had contact from a family of an inmate who has passed away shortly after he got released, and they're very interested to get some of his work published posthumously. And they approached us on that score. Well, there was never going to be a time where we'd say no to that. And that's happening. And that family are going to attend the launch. They're travelling a long way from central New South Wales to attend the launch here in Wollongong. And in the last couple of days, we've had contact from another lad who is now released after a number of years inside, who was one of our most prolific writers. And some of his work was actually selected. There's a publishing house in North Carolina in the United States who are putting out this huge anthology of international prison poetry, and they selected some of this lad's work to go into it. It was also selected to go into an anthology of work put out by Cambridge University Press. So his work is receiving really good international attention, and he is out now, and he contacted us. And we're absolutely amazed, and he wanted to know, could he still keep writing and would we give him some help? He wants to write his book. He's written children's books and goodness knows what. So, yeah, he wants to keep going. There's a number of them that will do that. The boys who were in the Two Poets book, yes, they keep writing. I don't know that they're out, but they keep writing.
Yeah. A lot of the inmates will get moved to other prisons. And so occasionally we'll get letters from other places being like, hey, I'm not a junior anymore, but please keep us in here.
One inmate who'd been transferred to a prison in Northern Territory got in touch with us. And yes, we printed that person's work too.
Fantastic. Well, it is an absolutely superb project, and it's good to see that that volume one was very prophetic, Auntie Barbara. You've got to 14, and I'm sure there's many more to come. Thank you so much, Auntie Barbara and Luke Patterson, for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Auntie Barbara Nicholson and Luke Patterson from Nagana Barangarai Project, the Black Wallaby Project. And Luke will be speaking at the Sydney Writers' Festival on the panel Big Dreaming, Voices from Detention on the 22nd of May. And as Auntie Barbara said, the new volumes, Saplings, Scribbly Gums, Voices from Cobham, and Dreaming Inside Volume 14, Voices from Junee, are going to be launched at the Wollongong Art Gallery on the 21st of May.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.